So this is talking with Sir William McCrae on 23 May 1988 at Bologna. Now, I'd like to ask you, I know that you were secretary of the RAS just after World War II, and therefore were in charge of receiving papers and handling them and so forth, and these radio astronomy papers began to come in, and they were eventually, many of them were published in monthly notices, and it seems to me this is unusual because most radio astronomy papers of the time were published in physics and engineering journals in other countries. Do you have any ideas on what the different conditions were in England such that they were immediately accepted within the standard astronomical journal?
I would give credit to Lord Blackett above all. He wasn't Lord Blackett then.
Right.
Who gave so much encouragement to Lovell, and as can say it now, after all these years, Blackett wrote to me as secretary, and he was very far-sighted, and sort of pointed out the importance to science to have these things published in a proper journal, and we did, you know. I think we would have done it on the merits of the case, I think, anyhow. But Blackett made us more aware of them,
right?
And I give him the credit. But you can then ask why Blackett was interested in astronomy. I think it must have been a lasting interest of his in some ways, because just about that time he was playing with his idea of the connection between magnetism and rotation in the cosmos, and then he developed a great interest in terrestrial magnetism.
Right.
So that although his own line was what you might call pure physics, he was more alive than most physicists to the more cosmic bearing of his work.
And of course, the cosmic ray work before the war also.
Yes, oh yes, yes, I should mention that.
But
I would like, I think, also to say that I think J.S. Hay had some effect there too, because somehow or other we were aware of his interest in solar-terrestrial relations and what you might learn from radio observations about these things. I can't remember the details.
But of course, he was an outsider from the astronomical community also.
Yes, yes, but I say we were somehow aware of what is going on there.
Right.
You could probably find in the archive how it happened.
Right.
I can't remember how it happened, but I remember that it did happen.
Do you remember council discussions at that time concerning the suitability of this kind of paper in monthly notices? Or was it just accepted that if they were good quality, they should go in?
I think it was just that. I don't remember any deliberate discussion of policy. There could have been. I mean, you can look at the council minutes.
Right. And of course, this is a long time ago, I understand. Now, Michael Ovenden, in the history of the RAS, which recently came out, credits you with encouraging the radio astronomers to submit to monthly notices. Did you actively go around and say, please publish with us, this is astronomy, you deserve to be with us?
Or? Well, I didn't canvass at all. But I hope I just took a reasonable view, and I must say they more than responded. I mean, they did extremely well. But why did Ovenden come into this?
Well, he, you know, in the recent history of the RAS book, says that you were important in fostering these papers.
But he was not an author.
He says this, though. I don't know what he bases it on.
But he didn't write any of the book.
He didn't. Well, then maybe it's somewhere else. I believe it was Ovenden that said this. I can't quite remember where now, I guess.
Ovenden would be aware of what was going on. Mm. He may have been one of those who succeeded me as secretary. He and Bande went on for quite a long time.
And he had a strong interest in radio astronomy, of course.
And I think when I was president, Ovenden and Bande were the secretaries.
Oh, is that right? I see. Another general question. These radio astronomers coming out of World War II radar with physics backgrounds and finding this new sky and working very differently from traditional astronomy, how do you see that influencing the course of astronomy, say, in the decade after World War II?
That's a big question. The greatest direct effect, I suppose, was when they discovered that some of the radio sources were at gospel distances. And as we've heard at this meeting, that led to all that was done about source counts and the testing of the steady state.
Right.
And all that sort of thing. But there are two things that have occurred to me as we've been talking. One was that there was some public, not public, but official inquiry into the status of radio astronomy and the future of it in Britain. I was not personally
involved. Was that the Fleck Committee are you referring to? That was...
It may have developed
about 1960 or 65, somewhere in that era.
The Fleck Committee did come into it, but I think there was something before that.
Something earlier.
But there again, you can look at the records.
Or was it the RAS Committee on Radio Astronomy that existed in the early 50s?
Could have been that, yes.
And made a recommendation for support of what became the 250-foot dish at Jodrell. Lovell was already pushing at that time.
Yes, I think it must have been that.
Right.
I mean, I personally was not involved in that.
Right. I have found some of the minutes of those of that committee's meetings.
I mean, I knew very well what was going on, but the test happened that I wasn't involved. That was an important thing, and some of the people I mentioned, of course, acted through that.
Right, right.
Matt, I think if you're writing the history, you ought to look at the doings of the group. If one thought long enough, one would mention a number of individuals who I think helped a lot. David Dewhurst.
Yes.
I think was...
Well, I have interviewed him.
Have you?
I know about his role, yes.
Yes. Well, I think that's apt to be forgotten, but...
Yeah.
I think he alone of the professional astronomers helped them in details.
That's right, I agree. He actually went out and did a lot of work, yes.
Yes.
Right. But also, you know, you answered, when I asked you a question about how radio astronomy affected astronomy, you answered on the intellectual side. Did you see any effect on the style of astronomy, on the way astronomy was done?
Well... We tried, I think, deliberately to talk about astronomy and not about radio astronomy and optical astronomy.
Even in the 5 years after the World War II, can you...
Well, we may have used the terms. I mean, we would do. I mean, we talk about radio astronomers and so on. But we tried, I think, to remember that we were really talking about the science of astronomy.
Right.
All new developments at first take on the label of the technique that comes in. You can't help it. I mean, you have X-ray astronomy and so on. But if it's successful, it becomes part of the science of astronomy.
Right. Well, one last question is to do indeed with the source count business. Had worked on the steady state theory to some degree. You'd work on the Big Bang theory also, and all aspects of cosmology. I'd be interested in your general opinion about this whole source count business. Now, you wrote the article at Patras, but in just a couple of minutes, could you sort of summarize, do you think that that was really a red herring that just wasted a lot of people's time in the end? Did it serve a useful purpose in terms of bringing attention to these cosmological issues? What is your sort of summary view on that whole episode?
It's hard to distinguish between what did happen, what things ought to happen. I think historically, a lot of the interest in the source count died a rather premature death when the background radiation was discovered.
Yes.
Actually, it was very illogical because the radio observations seemed to be in flat contradiction to the steady state, and that was a very good reason for rejecting the simple steady state theory. But the background, the discovery of the background was a positive discovery, and it didn't contradict anything.
Exactly. Yes.
And but because it had been predicted long ago by people like Gamow and so on, and on what really was the Big Bang idea, it was accepted as a very strong argument in favor of it. It was, as it turned out, but it wasn't obvious at the time that it should have been taken that way.
Right. For some reason, people were willing to put their faith more into a prediction that came correct than in a refutation of something else.
Contrary to what Popper would have us do.
Exactly.
But I don't think much of Popper's view. I mean, as regards anything scientific, it's just the common sense view that people have acted on all along.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. By the way, I see now that it was Ovenden that told me in an interview with him that McRae was important as secretary of the RAS and soliciting radio astronomers for meetings and for articles and monthly notices. It was not Ovenden writing in the history of the RAS, as I said. That ends the interview with McRae on 23 May 1988.